Good morning and welcome back to the Fourth Corner version of Saturday Morning Live. This is Charlie Crabtree, your host this morning, and we're going to do this start up with the second half of the show. Now we're going on to Senator John Braun, who is the Republican leader in the Senate in Olympia. Good morning, John. Are you there?
I'm here, Charlie. Thanks for having me on.
You betcha. So I guess what I wrote a lot of notes, and we'll get through a few, I suppose. But one of the things I wanted to start off with from the top, if possible, is I watched as the legislation went on, and there were a lot of issues that seemed to be cross-party, maybe that's the word, or not up and down votes on some pretty controversial stuff. What was your take on all of that?
I think you're asking, was there more or less bipartisan work on key issues?
Yeah.
I would say it's a mixed bag. I think that's true with every session. In some ways, this session was better in terms of working with the other side. It was certainly good to be back in person after 2 years of either remote or hybrid work from the pandemic. So that made a big difference. It's a lot easier to find agreement with people that you have sort of a different worldview with, if you're head-to-head and or face-to-face, rather. And I think that helped in many ways. It was more collegial. So all that's good. And there were some key issues that were done in a bipartisan way, ultimately. There's some that weren't. I think the most important ones that were bipartisan had to do with public safety, and we could talk about those. And we certainly made progress. I don't think we got exactly where we wanted to be on all areas, but we made progress, and we were there to work in good faith to solve these issues, because I think public safety was the top issue with the citizens around the state this year. Some other areas where there was bipartisan work that was unusual from the last few terms is in housing, quite a bit of bipartisan work where the last probably three or four terms or sessions, rather, have been very antagonistic. So that was some improvement there, and we made some progress, not everything we hoped to. But and then the last one I'd mention is the operating budget. I wouldn't call it a bipartisan budget. There's certainly things in there that I don't like, but it had certainly more Republican influence than it has had in the last three bienniums. And as a result, I think it is a structurally more sound budget. It grows at much slower rate than it has over the last three bienniums, less than half the rate. It doesn't include any new general taxes, which is a big deal, and it has a good size reserve, which is a big deal. So there's some other priorities inside the budget that made it more attractive, where they listened to us on key issues. So I think those three areas are where I'd say we had the best bipartisan impact, where Republicans in the minority had the best impact, most impact.
Okay, let's get into the nitty gritty and talk about that a little bit. Like the one you first mentioned, which I need always a re-explanation on police pursuit. Now, the first police pursuit bill, I think, I can't remember when it was passed, whether it was 19 or 20. 2020, when that was passed, what was it like before the initial bill was passed?
Yeah, so the most recent change, the one that's done such great harm to our state, was passed in 2021. So we had all the riots and the tragedy associated with the summer of 2020, and then the Democratic majority came in determined to do police reform, and I would say without really understanding what they were doing. And they did a number of things that were harmful. One of them was to change the rules for police officers, law enforcement officers, to pursue suspected criminals from a legal standard of reasonable suspicion, meaning they have a reasonable suspicion that someone committed a crime, to probable cause, which is a higher standard. That made us the only state in the country that had such a high level of proof required before they could give chase. And you have to understand that well before this, officers were trained not to pursue if they felt like it was going to put innocent bystanders at risk. So they already had rules on how and when to pursue to make sure they didn't do more harm than good. And the Democratic majority came in and made that even more difficult. And what we've seen over the last 2 years is organized crime, more than anybody else, has recognized, hey, if we commit a crime, in most cases, the police can't pursue us. Unless they literally see us committing the crime, they can't pursue us. And that's what's happened over the last 2 years. And we've seen lawlessness around our state, yeah. I think, as a result. There was bipartisan interest in addressing this issue during this session. And we did pass a bill. I would tell you the bill, and we could talk more detail about the bill if you'd like.
Yep.
But it was a step in the right direction, but I don't think it will solve the real problem. It doesn't go far enough to give police officers the tools they need to keep our streets safe.
Does it return us back to pre-2021?
It does in some cases. So we went from reasonable suspicion to probable cause in most areas in 2021. This takes us back to reasonable suspicion for essentially violent crimes against people, murder, assault, vehicular assault, domestic violence in some cases, where there's an assault. So it gives police more options. The thing is, you know, most of those types of crimes are not ones that ultimately end in a high-speed pursuit.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works. The problems we have in our communities right now is not from police not being able to pursue in those cases. It's not a problem. It's good that they now can with reasonable suspicion in those cases, but they really need to be able to pursue in an auto theft situation or reckless driving or a drive-away situation where someone is stopped for whatever reason and they know they've committed a crime, so they literally just drive away. And because the officer doesn't have probable cause, they can't chase them.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Wow.
What's that?
That part of it is still there. So really, is it still there? You correct me if I'm wrong. But if I get pulled over for, let's say, just excessive speeding and decide not to stop, is that...
Just drive away.
Just drive away. And that's still the case?
Yeah, if you steal a car and an officer has reasonable, doesn't have probable cause to say you stole the car, you can just drive away. You can do it at high speed. And we've seen, tragic accidents in our state as a result. Yep. We saw people who, it sometimes involves substance abuse, steal a car, go on a joyride at high speed, in many cases injure or in some cases kill innocent bystanders. And police officers are powerless to pursue. They were before this session. They still are after this session. And look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope, this change fixes the problem. We get after our lawlessness. But if you talk to law enforcement officers around the state, they will tell you no. They will tell you we didn't solve the main problem, which has to do with chasing people who are just often organized crime, who are just know the rules and they know how to get away with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So something in between here. I saw on something I was doing to research this a little bit is what happened to the catalytic converter theft and sale bill? Because that seems to be a point of both danger and organized crime.
Yeah, you're right. And we had, this has been a big issue in our state for the last couple of years. We've had rings of folks stealing Cali converters, often, right out in plain sight. I can tell you in our family's business, we lost over $40,000 worth of Cali converters. The new car dealership down the road from us, similar situation. They're just brazen. And there was a bill passed last year that got after a little bit. That was a bill that was proposed by Senator Jeff Wilson out of Longview. And ultimately, it was his language, but they struck it on a Democrat bill because they didn't want him to have the bill. But really, in the end, it didn't. The important thing is you get the policy, and he worked the policy hard, and he got some improvement. He had another, and then we learned from that, and he offered another bill this year to improve on it and make it stronger. The key stakeholders were supportive, and for reasons I can't fully explain, that bill just died in transportation. Now, I would tell you, it came out a little bit late in the session, so that sometimes causes bills. People don't fully understand them, so that you want to give the benefit of the doubt. You could say, well, it came less late in the session. It was just too late to make it work. By the rules, it still could have worked. I think that there was just an unwillingness to take this issue on, which is wrong. This is a big issue, and it's affecting everywhere, from commercial enterprises, like I described, to just a single mom who wakes up one morning, goes to start her car to take her kid to school, and it makes enormous noise because somebody's rolled underneath there and taken the catalytic converter out. Yep. And now she's faced without transportation, with a huge bill to get it fixed, that she may not be able to pay. So this is a big deal to regular people who are just trying to live their lives, and we've allowed organized crime to roll in and take over our state with the theft of catalytic converters.
Seems to happen in a lot of situations these days as far as that kind of living goes, if you want to live in a normal situation and this intrudes and you can't do anything about it. Let's get started before we take our first break on this Blake fix and the one-day session. Can we get some history on that and what went on with that day?
Sure. The Blake decision was from the state Supreme Court, essentially legalized the possession of hard drugs in our state. We tried very hard in 2021 when that decision was made to get a bill out that would address the problem. If you actually read the decision, it could have been as simply as adding the word knowingly into the existing statute so that, if you knew you had hard drugs and it was at that time, it was a Class C felony, and it would have solved the ruling from the state court. We didn't, the Democratic majority, they're following their goals, which was to essentially work towards decriminalization of hard drugs. And they refused to do that. We did get a bipartisan bill back in 2021 that made a gross misdemeanor. Unfortunately, the House killed that bill. And in the end, what it ended up being is just a regular misdemeanor, which was, and even more important, it had these two things called referrals before you could charge anyone. And a referral wasn't even what's called a diversion, where you're arrested and the prosecutor then says, if you go to treatment, we won't prosecute you. A referral is literally just the police officer says, hey, we see you have a substance use disorder. There's some treatment down the street. Here's the address. Why don't you go get some treatment? I mean, it was absolutely and totally useless. People who are suffering from substance use disorder
need help.
Aren't going to walk in and get treatment in most cases.
We'll be right back with the rest of the story after our mid-break. This is Charlie Crabtree, the fourth quarter version of Saturday Morning Live. We're on the air this morning for roundup of what happened in Olympia with Senator John Braun, the Republican leader of the state Senate. We were talking a little bit about the Blake fix. If you people don't know what that is, it has to do with drug possession and drug treatment. A lot of things going on with that Blake fix. We were at the point where we found out that the law that they were trying to fix this time only handed out cards to people who were caught with what used to be illegal drugs. And from that point, we can take it on. Senator?
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Yeah, essentially, in 2021, the Democratic majority in the state legislature put in place a policy that was an utter failure. It was, for all practical purposes, it legalized hard drugs. And we've seen, tragic results as follow. We now are nearly the top in the nation in terms of growth of overdoses. Yep. If you're under 60 right now, your most likely cause of death is an overdose. Yep. We see the overdoses in King County now nearly three on track, I should say, to be three times what they were before the Blake decision and the failed policy in 2021. So bad shape, and most importantly, people are dying as a result, and that we should all care about that.
Yep.
We fought pretty hard this year to fix that. We listened to people around the state, and I want to be clear. If you go look at the Democratic platform, they very clearly say they want to decriminalize drugs, and that's out of step with most Washingtonians, whatever their political views are. They're compassionate. They want people to get into treatment, but they don't want, you know, folks smoking crack on the sidewalk in front of, you know, a local retail organization or near the school.
How can the Democrats even be called compassionate if they want people to die on fentanyl?
Yeah. So we fought hard on this issue. We knew the people of the state of Washington were with us, and we got a lot of Democrats that recognized that and come over and work. You know, we worked in a bipartisan fashion to get a better bill. I won't say it's a perfect bill, but it's a strong step in the right direction. It goes to a gross misdemeanor. It is written in such a way that it can be enforced by law enforcement and by prosecutors. It does focus on getting people into treatment and getting them off their addiction, which I think is right, but it also has, you know, gives the prosecutors leverage to keep people in treatment. This is the challenge. You know, like I said earlier, you don't typically, if you're suffering from this type of addiction, just walk, you know, decide one day you're going to go get treatment and it's all good. That is a very hard situation for folks, and you need a little leverage to say, hey, you have a choice between going to jail for a period of time or going to treatment. If you complete the treatment, we're going to vacate your sentence, and you can get back to a normal life. We need some of that leverage to deal with this in a firm but compassionate way and get people back on a good track. So I think the bill is a big step in the right direction. I think it gives prosecutors, law enforcement, cities, counties the tools they need. There's a lot of funding in there as well for additional treatment. I think that's an important part of it. You just have to recognize you can't just say there's treatment, therefore the problem is fixed. You have to find a way. Right. To connect with these people and get them in treatment and keep them in treatment. If you don't do that, you're not going to be successful.
Right. We were talking a little bit earlier, I think, about the way that many of the policies seem to be nowadays is it's a lot easier to get a hold of drugs. And when you get a hold of drugs, there's many problems with addiction. And when there's many problems with addiction, you need more resources and more people involved in the mental illness aspect of addiction. And I'm not certain that I like to see the way it's going right now. I hope we can get a little bit more firm in that first taking of drugs, that first overdose, which puts you on a track for quite a number of years of your life of trying to get repaired. Those things, I hope we can stop up front without totally legalizing the drug system. Anyway,
yeah, this is the other thing I would say is we've got ourselves in quite a problem here. I mean, because of the previous lack of enforcement in some of our more urban areas, because of this 2 years we had with essentially no enforcement because of the change in the law,
Yep. We've
got a huge problem in front of us. It's going to take us a while to dig our way out of it. It's going to be some tough going. We have to, but if we don't, we're going to continue to slide downhill, and it's going to get worse, and more people are going to die. But I don't think – I am happy that we made progress.
Right.
I'd like to see us make more progress, but I am not – I want to be clear-eyed about this. This is going to be a long fight back to get to the point where we don't have drugs rampant in our streets and risk to our children and of exposure and possible addiction.
Yeah. One of the other things that struck my eye as I was going through the legislation and seeing what happens to families and what happens to people able to get a roof over their head was some legislation that was passed in housing. And what I heard when it came out to be debated, that what was really going to go on was in single family zoned areas, it was the state was going to dictate that local areas would have to get apartments and duplexes and triplexes into those areas to, try to densify enough to take care of all the people, but ruining a single-family unit neighborhood. Do you have comments, or can you educate me a little bit on that?
Yeah, sure. What you're talking about is referred to as the middle housing bill, and this was a bipartisan bill, and I would tell you it is not quite as you describe it, but there's certainly some real concern. You know, people who live in single-family communities are concerned that, you know, they get a $6 beside them. They have. I mean, I can understand that. That way this bill actually works, that's unlikely. Okay. It came a long way from where it started. There is, in some very large cities in our state, a possibility they could get as many as six. In most cases, both because of utilities, transportation, just basic economics. You know, before a builder would do this, it's got to pencil out, right? And in most cases, the vast majority, it doesn't pencil out, because to do six, you have to make, I think, two of them meet certain affordability criteria, right, which is very uneconomic. So I think what you're going to get is some changes the way I've seen it work, and the way I think it will work. It'll be slow over time, and where you have a nice neighborhood, and you have one house that's in some disrepair, and a developer is able to buy it at a lower price, or the owner, you know, has the means to fix it up. They're going to think about, hey, can I make an ADU here, an additional dwelling unit, sometimes called like a mother-in-law apartment,
right,
or next door, and that will happen over time. But there's, I don't think that's necessarily bad. We got to do something. We are so far behind. We are 300,000 homes behind in housing, right, our citizens. It's making housing very affordable, particularly for first-time buyers. If you're a first-time buyer right now, you know, my kids are getting close to that age, and unfortunately not all of them are in Washington, but if they come back to Washington, I want them to be able to buy a house, and right now they couldn't. So the thing with the middle housing bill is people sometimes don't realize it. It will turn. He offers the opportunity from turning renters into buyers, because when you do this under the bill, you can build a small, affordable, say, townhouse beside, right, or okay, behind, and you can divide it under what's called a zero lot line division, so that you can that becomes an affordable unit. Somebody can buy and own and build up equity from there. So I think this is going to, you know, a combination of the fact the bill evolved a lot during session. I think at the beginning of session, if you look at that bill, some people were right to be worried about it. I don't disagree with that. I was worried about it. I think by the end of session, it had gotten to a point where it will be more of an evolutionary process that will, and it, for me, the most important part is that it will give another, it won't fix the problem. It'll give another tool to help get there over time. And most importantly, help give opportunity to first-time home buyers to purchase a place so they can start building equity, building a home that will help themselves and their families for long term.
Well, for that alone, I appreciate that information. That's something I wasn't aware of, and I am happy to hear that we're going to try to get some opportunity to buy up. I remember way back in the day where I went and got a mortgage on my first double wide trailer for as much as the rent I was paying. So it would be nice to have the opportunity to do that again. If this helps that at all, it's a big plus, and I didn't know that. And I appreciate you bringing that up. We're running low on time. So I think we're going to call it a day. I can't say how much I thank you for being on, and I thank you very much for your service. I hope you have a heck of an off-season time, and we'll talk to you soon, and take care.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Charlie. Have a good day.
You bet. Take care. Bye.